Hi, we're back. You're listening to On the Town with Tanya Cooper, and this is part two of an interview with Rich Jackson. So, hey, Rich Jackson, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Okay, hi, welcome back to the show again.
Hey, thanks for having me back. And let me tell you something, that is a hot song by Tatiana.
Oh,
that is hot.
Oh, yes, I love that song. It's like one of my favorites right now. I've been playing it. She's like, will you stop it? I'm like, what do you want me
no.
to do?
No. That thing is serious. That is serious. It is real.
Yeah, Tatiana Cooper, that was a really good song. But I was going to say, so I called you back because we didn't get to discuss anything. Like, I'm going to say a topic, and then you give me your comedic side to it, okay?
Oh,
ready?
Oh, okay. All right, okay.
Shucker! I had to throw you off base because you're too on point. Ready? All right, Weinstein and women.
Two great things that, thank God, are no longer together.
Okay, good.
I say that as a joke. And here's the funny part. Remember this, we were talking about Tyler Perry. Weinstein gave Tyler Perry his break.
Oh, well.
You know that, right?
Well, can we talk about it? What kind of break did he get?
Yeah, I know. Hey, put on that dress and I'll see if I get your career.
He does play Madea well, I'm just saying.
He does, yeah, a little too well. Just saying.
Harvey Weinstein does have male victims, but they won't come out because it's too embarrassing.
Yeah, I know.
Yo, he touched my balls.
No, I know. Well, Terry Crews turned around and said that. Don't know why, but yeah, he turned around.
You don't know why?
No. I don't know why, because it's like Terry Crews. You're 6'3", 270 pounds of jack black muscle. Somebody touched your package and they lived? They lived? Well, my wife was there. I don't give a damn if your wife. Anyway, that's just me.
Right.
That's just me.
Yeah, no, I know. And especially because my wife was there, I'd be like going off on somebody. But that's right. You're right. I thought it was weird. Okay. So we got Weinstein out of the way. So Donald Trump and pussies.
Yeah. Again, that's something he really likes. I bet you with those little hands, he really don't know what to do with them. The cat or the other one. I don't think he really knows. Because if he did, Melania would be right there in the White House.
Melania, that poor thing. I think she's a battered wife.
She might be.
That's just my personal thoughts.
I don't know. She might be. Who knows?
She looks petrified of his ass. I seen him come off that plane, and he give her that look. He got that tight lip, the little bit of lip he got. And she'd be looking like, if I wasn't had the opportunity, I would say something to you, but I don't have it. Because
I know
he's going to stomp the living shit out of me if I say it, though.
Well, remember, you know, Putin sold her to him, so, you know, she's got a fearless leader sold her to Donald Trump.
Yes,
so.
And I mean, even though I always empathize with her because she's a woman under a man's rule, but I still say women, we sometimes need to stop putting ourselves in these predicaments where we rely on a man for everything, and then when he leaves, we're caught out there, or when he starts, you know, becoming abusive or mean or whatever he does, now we're really caught because we ain't got no family to back us up because we ain't kept in touch with him because this man was taking care of us. So now we're really just out there. We have nothing, you know?
Yep.
So that's, and you know, Hollywood is famous for playing that game. I mean, real good. You know, a lot of women, you know, that's the reason why with the Cosby case, I'm always, even though what he did was still horrible because of the fact that he used the medicine to make him fall asleep or whatever. So that's the part that's so atrocious. But I don't believe that these women went in without thinking they were going to have sex. They didn't expect to have it when he was ready
to have it. We'll see. Right. But also, there's a little thing. I'm not a conspiracy nut, but I know this. He wasn't the only one doing that.
Of course not. Are you kidding me?
You know, they said, but they said Hugh Hefner did the same thing.
Of course.
Bragged about it.
And who did
Cosby used to hang around a lot?
That was his sponsor
for his jazz, was Hugh Hefner.
Thank you.
So, you know, they're all in the same club.
What about this? When they were at the new Playboy Mansion, all the bunnies, luckily he don't like black girls too much, all the bunnies said, you know, I knew what I was there to do. I was there to go around and have sex with whoever he wanted me to have to. So how are you going to come out when the girls come back to Bill Cosby raped me? How did he rape you at the Hugh Hefner Mansion? Please explain that to me.
Right. Well, remember that one got dropped because the girls in the Playboy Bunny were at the mansion, from what I remember. Mm-hmm. The ones at the mansion were like, well, we were 15. And they're like, hold it. And then they reinvestigated and said, because Hugh was like, nah, I don't know 15-year-old girls in my place, you know.
Exactly. I was waiting for that.
Yeah.
I said, oh, good. So Hugh's going down. Half of Hollywood's going down because they all
going down. Right.
Girls. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So let's keep it real.
Right.
So that's the reason why I get shiesty with the – even I didn't really love Bill Cosby, in all honesty. I loved his comedy, but I didn't really – you know, because of what he said about the little black boys, that really annoyed me. So I wasn't a big fan anyway. But what you ain't finning to do is, as Steve Harvey would say, is accuse one man, and then you got a monster like Woody Allen, and everybody loves Woody Allen because he makes the best movies. Oh, my God, he's just like God of movies. And but yet he married his 18-year-old foster daughter, which means they must have been courting when she was 16.
If not earlier, remember, in Living Color made that sketch about that, too. Yeah, when they first came on, they did a sketch about Woody Allen having a camp for Asian girls that he raised.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah. Wow.
You know, there's a whole lot of stuff going on, you know.
Right.
He ain't the only one. I'm not condoning it, but what I'm saying is he ain't the only one. Just, matter of fact, I was just talking to somebody today, and then I know you got other questions, but remember when David Letterman was sleeping with his interns? He got a pass for that.
Oh, no, I don't remember that.
Oh, there was a big scandal. Check it out.
Really?
David Letterman and his interns. Oh, yeah. They gave him a pass. Well, how about this? Remember when, the logistics of it, but the same time the Michael Jackson thing was going down, Seinfeld was running around with that high school girl, Shoshana, something like that.
Shoshana. Oh, right.
Shoshana. Yeah, Shoshana wasn't she still in high school?
She was, wasn't she? I thought so, but I wasn't sure. You know, they try to confuse me. They do a good job. They do a good job at that.
Right. But what I'm saying is, some of these guys get passes. I'm like, why does one get a pass and the other one doesn't get a pass? You know, like,
because it's bullcrap.
Very bullcrap. It's like, Cody, who's calling the shot? You know, we'll crucify this one. We'll let this one go.
Yeah, and I don't think that's right. You're going to do it. Let's do it across the board. Everybody goes
across
down.
The board. Right.
You know,
right.
But that's not usually how it goes in Hollywood. It's the least popular get hangs for everybody.
Right.
You know?
Or if you're popular, you disappear for a while.
Yep.
And then you come back.
Yep, which is probably what they're going to do with Weinstein, and he might. I hope you don't care.
I don't think we will see him, but he'll be there. He ain't going to leave his company.
What about Louis C.K.?
I think he'll be back because somebody dropped some information to me. I'm like, yeah, and I'll say why. Louis C.K. I heard he has his own production company.
Oh, then he'll be back.
And that's who I heard it was making his show. Now, if I'm wrong, ladies and gentlemen, I'm wrong. But I was informed that he has his own production company, which means...
Well, but he still needs sponsors.
What's that?
He still needs advertisers.
No. But still, if he's around, and this is why I use him, this point I'm going to use as an example. Mel Gibson, anti-Semite, Holocaust denier, racist. And guess what? He's back in movies. It took him a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
He still directs films, and he's back now. And he's been back in mainstream films for, what, 2-3 years now?
Mm-hmm.
But he disappeared for a bit. You know, he'll just disappear and then come back.
I mean,
as scary as that is, that's what happened.
Wow.
To some of them, not to all of them, but to some.
But you know
of
what
them.
Pisses me off? It's like, and it's only men that get these breaks. Women, we're done. Once we're done, we're done. And they have weight requirements for us. Like, you know, I got to be a size 6 or size 8.
Right.
I got to be pretty. My hair has to be long and preferably blonde.
Right.
And it's like, get the hell out of here, man. You know, they try to use Leslie.
what's her name? The comedian Leslie Jones, is that her name? They tried to give her crap.
Right.
When she first came on, that was horrible. That was horrible, horrible, horrible.
No, it is. It is horrible.
Harvey Weinstein is horrible. Not a good-looking man. I would never even look at that guy. So how
no,
do you
but,
judge
but he's
her?
A man. But unfortunately, he's a man in power.
Yeah, but
he's in power.
To me,
he calls
it's a
the
double
shot.
Standard because when women are
it's
in
a
power,
huge double standard.
They don't. I mean, I'm sure there's some men who are being sexually harassed too in Hollywood. So I'm not going to say that. What I'm just saying, it's just bullcrap. It's bullcrap.
No,
that's why I say.
Tanya, not only is it bullcrap. Now, let's look at the UK for a second. I'm not saying they're innocent of anything, but there's something I do admire them for. They still use their actresses even when they're older.
Yes.
When you watch their shows,
yes,
Helen Mirren ain't 25, but she's still on television.
And the
Judy
James
Dench.
Bond woman, right? Yes.
No, that's Judy Dench. Judy Dench.
Yes, I love her.
She ain't 25 either. There's a whole lot. There's a bunch of them. And you still, and they still use them on television. And you're like, oh, my God, that's so-and-so? Oh, my God, how old is she? Oh, but she's still on. You still see them. And I think that's brilliant.
Only Susan Lucci here gets away with that, and that's after Botoxing.
Yes,
I'm
it
just
is.
Saying. Botox is a big thing in Hollywood now here, which is
of
disgusting
course.
That women in our country have to hack up their face to stay on television. And in England, you could be 90 years old. Who gives a damn? As long as that you fit that role, that's all we care about.
Hey, it's who's sitting there? Who's sitting in the chair and saying, this is what I want? Some dude.
Well, we have to.
You know. Look, thank God for independent films. Thank God for independent filmmakers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I say we have to really take our whole fate into our own hands, is what I say.
Yes.
You know, because it's just not, it's not going to work if you don't. If we let other people decide for us, then, you know, it stays, stays the same, you know?
Yep. Hey, any more questions?
Who was the other person? Kim Jong-un.
Oh, Mr.
Why do you
Mr.
remind
World.
Me? Why do you remind me of a nice version of him?
Who?
Kim Jong-un.
Who? Me? Oh, that's
joking.
Messed up. I was gonna say that's messed up. I'll even ask. He's not bald. I ain't got no hair.
He's like a little kid. He's like a little kid.
Well,
that's what it is.
Well, yeah, I know. You know what though? He really don't call the shots. I think he's funny. He walks up. He smiles. His generals have so many medals that it's ridiculous. You know, I heard somebody say, if they attack us, we'll just take a giant magnet, and all their military guys will be sucked up from all the metal they got on their chest. Why, you know, he's cute. He looks like Cartman, and why should I be afraid of him? I mean, I think it's funny. The press wants us to fear Kim Jong-il like we fear the Russians. Come on, stop it. I hate when they do that. He could launch a missile that could get past our missile defenses. If that was the case, ladies and gentlemen, we would have been speaking Russian decades ago. So I don't believe it.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Wow.
You know,
well,
I don't believe it. But he is cute, though. He looks kind of cute there. Like, you know, he waves and smiles. He looks like a big kid.
He's a big kid. He's a little big kid. What about, another one, the new tax plan.
Oh my God!
I know you'll be in that bracket. You know, corporations.
Yeah, right. I wish. When they're done, when this whole thing's done, we're all going to have to go see a proctologist. But we won't have Obamacare to get it looked at.
Oh no!
Because there's a big screw coming. There's a big screw coming, y'all.
I know.
I'm not going to tell you. I
sealed the back hole.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to tell you to relax and go with it, but there's something coming. It's not going to be good.
Well, thank you so much for coming back. I appreciate you. What else? Anything you want to talk about?
Ty, it's always great to sit and talk with you.
You still doing radio, right?
Yeah. I do internet radio every once in a while, but when I get my lazy butt out of bed. I'm on, where am I at? Area 24 Radio. The Man of Action's Rent Party. Yeah, area24radio.com.
I love that show.
Oh, thank you. And you were on it, and I have to bring you back on there to talk more about your charity, because you know you're doing great things out there.
Time.
Okay. Well, but next time I'll make it in the daytime, not in the middle of the night.
I know that was funny. But, we're going into the studio. Where are we going? Over here.
While
we're at it.
I know.
Who buys food at 10 o'clock at night? Who buys food at 10 o'clock at night upstate?
right. I do.
I know.
And after that, ladies and gentlemen, I take her into this creepy old factory.
Go up a creepy elevator, right?
It's so creepy. Freddy Krueger refuses to go in it.
Yes.
Jason walks by it and runs away. I mean, you know, this joint's scary looking, but we do radio from it.
Yes, if I didn't know you, I would have been like, "Where is this dude taking me?" Okay.
No, the studio's over here.
And then when we get to go into Studio B, we go to Studio B, and I'm like, "Okay, go around the little thing there, and then you will find our location."
Yes.
So funny.
That's a scary spot. Oh no, I had a lot of fun on it too. I had a lot of fun. And I always have fun there. But you know what, Tommy? There are, you know, people like sketch comedy. There's tons of it going on in New York City.
If someone wanted to start, what advice would you give them? If someone might start out with doing improv, what would you tell them to do?
What's that, to start out in improv?
Yeah, if they wanted to start improv.
If they wanted to start improv, I would send them to good teachers, first of all. If I'm dropping names, I would drop a name like Mark Adam Smith, who teaches at the IRTE, the Improv Repertory Theater Ensemble, I think it is. He's a great teacher. He has a young lady teaches with him, too. I can't remember her name right now. But they're awesome teachers. They're getting it right. You know, they tell you, I mean, improv is what we do every day of our life. And this is what I say when I teach workshops, is if – forget about what you see on Whose Line Is It Anyway. Everybody does improv every day. And the biggest improv everybody does is calling out for work.
Yes, God.
Yes, because when you call out from work, you're like, okay. Right.
It's dropped into my left knee.
Right. You know, you got to get a disease, but it's got to be the right disease in case they ask you about it. You've got to play it up. Right. You're like, I've got the H2.
Scurvy on the boat.
Right. You're like, I'm dying. I can't come in. I mean, that's the greatest one. Or for you ladies, you're out in the store. You're at Walmart. Mm-hmm. And some toothless guy or weirdo or some guy comes up to you. Talking cheap lines, talking about, I think, you know, heaven's really upset because there's an angel next to me here on earth. Oh, boy. Hey, girl, why don't you kick me those digits? Come on now. Ladies, you start improvising when you hear that. I'm a lesbian. I got brain surgery tomorrow. My grandmother died again. You know, you coming out with excuses then, you know. But that's all improv is. You know, now Mark Adam Smith and his crew, they teach you how to do it properly and how to get that muscle in your brain so that you produce creatively. And no matter how you process it, it always works. And it's a team effort. It's a team effort.
Who taught you improv?
Well, Mark Clark. You're right. I never studied with Mark.
Okay.
Mark and I met because he was teaching in a place called Gotham City Improv.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of Gotham. Yeah.
Okay, which is still around. Matter of fact, you and I also, what's his name, came out of there? Murph.
Oh, Murph, too. That's right.
Yes.
You mentioned that.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's how I met Murph.
James Murphy.
Yes, James Murphy. Well, that's how I met James Murphy. Yes. And what happened was I learned improv first from Mort Clark. Then later, I was in a couple groups, but I think the group I learned most of what's called short form. I was in I was in an improv group called Dead Comic Society.
I've heard of that.
Okay, and they had a leader in it. The guy who became director, his name was John Fulweiler.
Mm.
And I actually learned a lot from John. I may never have told John that, but I learned a lot from him that I would take when I put together the Nat Turner Review. So that's where I really put it together. Got the stuff together was with John. I learned a lot of things because it was different than the way Mort was teaching it. Because Mort did a different style of improv.
Right.
And then over time, I just formulated other stuff on my own. So because of the principles and the theories and the things I wanted to do on stage, but like I said, Mark Adams Smith and his crew at IRTE, they teach you that no matter how you think, it's fine. It's just working as a team to make the scene work.
Right.
You know.
Well, that's great.
You know. Yeah, and they're really great teachers. And a lot of the other schools, I don't trust them. I don't trust them.
I remember you saying that.
Yeah, I mean, I've had to literally reprogram people. Reprogram them because these other schools are taught them to think a way that's not natural for them.
Right, right.
Okay, and exactly. I'm like, you're killing my scene here. But so-and-so said, I'm like, you know what? I don't care what so-and-so says.
Okay, you saying that? well, I know. I trained under you, and so unfortunately, that cannot be undone at this time. So, you know, we won't mention where I went to, but I'm sure. You know, I did well.
I'm sure you did.
That was good. It's just that I had you in my head. I couldn't get you out.
I could not get you out of my head. Well, unfortunately, when I first started the Nat Turner Review with you in there, I didn't know anything. I was really flying by the seat of my pants. I'm saying this now.
Really? That was brilliant stuff. That was freaking brilliant. I mean, when we first started in my apartment, wherever that was, and
we went down
to the Village and we did that show where we pulled Hannibal Lecter out. And somebody was the police officer. That was the best sketch ever. And I don't know why you never throw that in your thing. That was freaking brilliant.
How
Hannibal Lecter became a cannibal.
No, it was it was, what's his name? Jeffrey Dahmer. Dahmer sketch.
Jeffrey Dahmer, right. Oh, Lord. Oh, I thought it was Hannibal. Oh, my God. Where did I get that from? So it was Jeffrey Dahmer.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
And he was in the home ec. Yeah, I got you. So yeah, that was
We're hit with his first love. Yeah.
Yes, that was the best ever. You got to tape that for me, and I got to air it. Seriously.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I'll see what I can do for those of you who are listening. That sketch helped us helped us get started for real. For real, like got us in our first big venue.
For those
of you who are listening who've never seen it, this is the early 90s when I wrote this thing, so Dahmer was alive. But the sketch was Jeffrey Dahmer reliving his first love. And as you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, ladies and gentlemen, was a cannibal who ate people, who ate guys primarily. And it was him talking about this girl he was in love with. And they go to the prom together, and something really crazy happens.
I can say. Oh, Jeffrey, kiss me.
Kiss me, take me, and Jeffrey got nervous, and then all of a sudden she started taking his clothes off, and then she whispered in her ear because she was so turned on. She's like, eat me, Jeffrey, eat me, right?
Eat me, and he says, go ahead,
so I did, right? And I baked her up right there in the hallmark room, and you're like, what?
Exactly. That was.
You know what? I'm going to dig that up. See that? Now you made me go. I'm going to dig that one up.
That should always be in there because that is just so freaking funny, hilarious. It's the only time you will ever laugh at a cannibalistic situation. The only time you're going to laugh, especially if you don't know if he's gone now, but when he was alive.
He's dead. They killed him in prison.
Exactly. Well, I'm sure they feasted off of him because he liked little black boys. So that's what his problem was.
He was
too discriminatory. You can't be a racist bone eater. I mean, really.
Well, I mean, he wasn't right. I mean, he had a brother's ass in his freezer. They found a brother's ass in his freezer.
Oh, come on, man!
And the messed up part was, Paul Mooney did some incredible jokes on the whole subject.
Oh no, he didn't.
He was like, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer had a brother's brother's ass up in his refrigerator. And where did he work? In the chocolate factory. See, you knew something bad was going to happen then. I'm just saying, that's just wrong.
That's just wrong. what else you got in the anything new coming up in the recent weeks or after the holidays?
Well, I'm going to say I think we have two shows. I think I was saying we have two shows there. In New York City, the end of January, and then in February we'll be back in Austin. I think isn't that your birthday?
Yes, February 9th,
that's
baby.
That's your February 9th.
Yes,
I'll
and
see,
usually
I'll see
wait,
what we can do.
Wait, it's usually snowing, and I usually can never. I'm always housebound on my birthday. We can never go out till 2 weeks after. That's
all right. Well, then I'll make it. I'll make it later in the month.
Yeah,
I'll make it later in the month then. Okay.
Yeah, make it later. Make it later because we don't want no snow plow. Austin is a drive. It's only 15 minutes, but it becomes a nightmare if you go down them hills in the snow.
Yeah, I know. And especially we're at the bottom of a hill down there. So,
oh, yeah, I know. But, I remember.
Yeah. Yes,
long,
yes, yes.
Long, curvy road. Long, curvy road.
Yes, yes, yes.
Not so. Cutting, curvy.
So, yeah, so that's what we'll be doing, you know, January and then February. And maybe between now and then I'll dig up the Jeffrey Dahmer sketch and see how we can make it relevant again.
Yeah, actually, when I come down, I'd like to jump on stage and do that one, and you can have me be the police officer again, or whoever the therapist, or whoever. Yeah,
hey,
I would love to.
You know what? You know what? And I hope he's listening. Mark Morales did that. Oh, did you? Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
but remember, Mark Morales was originally Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yes, he played that so well.
Yeah.
He played that too well.
Yeah, he played a little too well. Yeah, and I think that's maybe why he's out in Texas right now.
Texas? That's where Mark's at? Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, that's where he ran away to. So, he's
warm.
Out in Texas. Yeah, I know. Until the next hurricane, you know.
Oh, yeah. You're so crazy. Until the next hurricane. So, my hurricane is about to come. But I'm so happy you came back for part two. For those of you listening,
thank you very
I'm with
much.
Mr. Rich Jackson from the Nation.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah.
Yay. And I'm with Tanya Cooper of On the Town.
That's right. On the Town with Tanya Cooper. And we thank you again, Rich Jackson. You're welcome here anytime. You're welcome to call us up anytime. You know that. We go way back. Yes.
I know. I know.
We should find – we're going to figure that out after. But we're going to call us the show together.
Cool.
I think that would be fun.
All right.
And I will talk to you very soon. And we appreciate you for coming back through again.
Well, thanks for having me. And ladies and gentlemen, hey, thank you always. And keep supporting Tanya. She's doing great work
there. Thank you. And we'll talk to you soon.
You got it.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Hi, it's On the Town.
Hi.
Is this
How
James
doing?
Murphy?
It is. How are you?
How are you, James Murphy? It's On the Town calling.
Great. Welcome. Great to hear from you.
You too. You sound like you're exhausted.
Well, it's been a long day.
Long day,
but
huh? Yeah, a long day.
Self-employment has its moments, I suppose.
Yeah.
My sister tested her, had her... you know, she did one of those DNA tests, and now she's trying to convince me that I'm 33% British.
Oh, really? I did mine, you know, and I have Scottish. Well, I knew about the Irish, but
yeah,
African, and then a little Israeli, which I knew.
Really?
Princess in me always knew that I had that in me. And, yeah, no, seriously. I knew that from another family member, too. But remember, my father's side, I don't know. So some of that stuff.
Ah, so that's interesting for you.
Russian and Scandinavian.
Really?
Yeah, and a small percent Lithuanian.
Lithuanian?
Yeah, I was like, what? I knew I loved
it. They have a dartboard, I think, over there, and they just take your name, and then they throw the darts, and they go, okay, Tanya Cooper, let's give her some Lithuanian.
No, it's so weird because my grandfather, my birth grandfather is, you know, was white, Russian, you know. They said he was British. I mean, they said he was, yeah, British and French. His grandmother was from, his mother was from France. And they came over here when he was younger, blah, blah, blah. He moved to somewhere down Mississippi, New Orleans, met my grandmother, got married, boom. That's the story that I know. His father's side disowned him because they were, I don't know if he married a mostly black woman. He met a black woman. her grandfather was Irish.
I always thought we were just Irish and German, and that was it. So the British, I don't know, maybe because Britain and Ireland are connected.
Exactly. Say before the Union Jack, hello, they were all connected. You know?
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. She's only a couple years older than me, and I assume it. Unless there's any shenanigans, we have the same parents. So I didn't do much independently. I always thought I was from outer space, so I'm afraid to do my...
You're afraid you were originally from here anyway.
I don't want to hear what planet I'm actually from. They might come back again.
Cyborg. You're a cyborg. I already know.
Cyborg, yes.
Cyborg.
Mechanical man.
Don't worry. I don't even know. Mine doesn't even have a name, so don't feel bad. That's how we probably, speaking of which, how did you get into comedy? Probably because you knew you were a cyborg.
Yeah, I was always the clown of the family. My dad was a sales manager. And
really?
He used to go around at sales talks, so maybe, but he, you know, he introduced me to comedy when I was young.
Wow.
I remember Flip Wilson and Laughing and George Carlin.
Yes. You remember Benny Hill?
I don't know. I just found it was fun and easy for me. Not easy, but it was just comfortable, I guess, to be funny. And seemed like a natural progression.
Mm.
And to start making, it's fun to try and make people you don't know laugh. That's a whole different, you know, team.
Wow. Well, who's your
favorite? Parties. My favorite comic, now it's Nate Bargatze. I just like... He's like from a little town, and, you know, he's kind of like unusual, talks about himself and his wife. He has a very odd outlook on things, which I enjoy, something different. I try not to listen to too much comedy because it's hard that it might influence what I'm writing about. So, unfortunately, I find it hard to listen. I tease myself, I'll turn on the comedy channel on the radio and then quickly turn it off after a few laughs. Like, oh, that's a great bit. Oh, now I can't write anything in that direction. So find himself, you know, conflicted on what I can listen to. And
yeah, I do the same thing, though. I find I someone say, oh, do you know who so-and-so is? I said, no. And they're like, really? I was like, no. Do you have to know your competition? I have no competition. What I do is what I do. What you do is what you do. And,
yeah. And
frankly, I don't want any ideas in my head. If we happen to have the same idea, great. But I don't want any ideas in my head or to be, you know.
When I started, I do it to get this kind of like the schematic of it, you know, like what a setup and punchline was and how you could kind of give away a punchline before you got to it and kind of weaken the joke and all that. And not to say that I have it down, but it was interesting in the beginning. I would go to other shows and watch how comics work, especially if you see somebody you like and watch them a few different venues. I would learn how, like, oh, he took that material and it's the same material, but he rotated this and put that over there, and then he put something new in it. And, you know, I was enjoying it. I was learning from somebody with a lot more experience, you know.
And, have you got any shows coming up lately?
I'm going to try and get down to New York on Saturday. Marissa Smith has a show at Otto's, the first Saturday.
Right?
A small tiki bar in New York City that has some of the best shows in New York. I mean,
Fashionably
often be people. Anybody ever told you about that place?
With Fashionably Funny Productions?
No, Fashionably Funny is her other. Fashionably Funny is usually at Broadway Comedy Club and Greenwich Village.
Okay,
this one is Merriment and Mortification. It started out as kind of like a haunted, costumey kind of thing, and it's just grown into be a very reliably great show. It's free, no admission.
Yeah.
You often have headlining comics coming in to work on things earlier in the night, and then they'll go off to their headline gigs. And it's a difficult spot because it's 6 o'clock on a Saturday, so it's somewhat early for people that are planning on going out. But it's always been amazing.
Right? Yeah.
What's that?
It's on 14th Street.
14th Street between Avenue A and B.
Yeah, I never forgot. I did a show there a couple times, actually, and I never forgot the name. Otto's Shrunken Head. That's the first
one. And they have tiki bar drinks with special glasses. And there's something there almost every night. If you go on their Facebook page or their website, like usually following us, there'll be sometimes surf guitar music that was I had friends come to a comedy show and they stayed for the music afterwards and realized that they loved surf music, which they had never really heard before. They stayed till 1 o'clock in the morning. And there's a promoter named Unsteady Freddy, who's quite a guy of his own. And it's cool because you do comedy and there's a drum kit behind you as you're performing. The drum kit's always there.
Yeah, I remember that place. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, I also remember because of the name, Otto's Drunken Head. And I was like, oh, that's the first time, like, any woman passing this place would be like, I'm not going in this place. You don't want to hear about a shrunken head.
Yeah.
I'm just
saying. Not satisfying.
No. So I never forgot the name, but it was a fun event.
I always wanted to perform there, and I was kind of glad that I found a way in because I somehow had heard about it because I looked up lists of, like, bars that you have to go to, you know, they're funky places. Up the same street is a place called Beauty Bar, and it has comedy in the back, and it actually has a beauty salon. It's not really a whole salon, but I think you can get your nails done while you're sitting in the bar having a drink.
Really?
Kind of, yeah, same 14th Street, a little farther up the block.
That's fine. So,
if that's on your to-do list, if you want to go out and have a cocktail while you're getting your nails done,
I'll catch some
to Beauty Bar.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow. So have you seen all today's headlines going on, huh?
Yeah, I was just catching up. That's what I was doing before I spoke to you, Matt Lauer. And Garrison Keillor, who is like your grandfather, basically.
I know.
He touched a woman to comfort her on her back. And now he's gotten contacted by a lawyer. So I kind of wonder if I'll ever date again. I kind of think no at this point.
At this point, it's a wrap. Well, listen, it's funny because everybody is coming out of the woodwork now that they were these people. I'm like, they've been creeps. I don't know why the women waited so long to say anything.
Exactly. I had the same conversation with a friend. He's like, why isn't it called out when it happens?
Here's my perspective on that, though. It's not even that, like, I'm not shaming the victim because obviously,
I can understand that.
But what I'm saying is, hello, you didn't give a shit about the other victims, so now all of a sudden we're supposed to give a shit about you. You didn't care about the next kid that came behind you, the next young girl came up that was impressionable, that might have been, you know, suicidal, and now she's all screwed up, or all these, you know, wait till all the celebrities, the musicians, like, I think Kesha was definitely victimized, Britney, all of those, I think every last one of them that's made it to the top has been victimized by somebody at some point. They just don't want to tell it.
It's weird how power corrupts people.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's a bad thing, but as soon as people get position of power, and I hate to say, sorry, man, but especially men, that's the first thing they do is like... If they're a creep, that's the first thing they do. So if they're regular, great people, that doesn't matter if they have power or not. So I want to make that clear. I'm not saying every man...
Yeah.
Does that. It's a man who's already a creep and who already has issues will definitely use this as a way of saying, I mean, Matt Lauer, really? Katie Couric said a year ago, they asked her she was doing the Olympics. They said, well, what's the worst thing your boss has ever done? You know, Matt Lauer, what's so annoying about him? She said, well, he's always pinching my butt all the time.
Wow.
He said it on national.
And now they're saying the staff was well aware that he always cheated on his wife, and he lived in New York and she lived in Southampton.
Of course. Of course.
That's a big red flag.
I mean, surprise, really? I mean, Katie, one of his prized possessions. That's why she made it to where she's got her own show. You don't think it's funny she got her own show? There's nothing exciting about her, in my opinion. I'm just saying.
Well, it's just the list just
of all the
going,
women,
I guess.
I would not have picked her to give her, her own show. But that's just me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, everybody's got their thing. But whatever. I just think it's sad that all these people are all of a sudden, I mean, they're coming in droves. It's not even like one. Okay. It's like 50, you know, in 2 days are now saying, yes, it was me too. Wait a minute.
Oh, yeah. They're piling on. We just had two more come up from Matt Lauer.
How many?
And, what's the fascination with them exposing themselves? Guys are like these old guys, which, if anything, you think they'd be embarrassed. They're just dropping their pants all over town.
Oh, well,
a lot of pants dropping going on.
It's an ego thing. It's an ego thing. I have the power.
Yeah.
I can show you. I can make a.
Harley Rose, for example. I mean, a guy's 70 years old. And he's running around acting like a dumb teenager, teenager.
They didn't get Larry King yet, did they?
Oh, Larry King, yeah. You can add that to his resume. That guy's real. It seems like the creepier the people are, the more likely they are to do it.
Oh, wait, so they did get him? They did get him?
I don't know. No, I didn't hear anything about him.
Oh, I was going to say, please not my Larry King. Come on, man.
No, I haven't heard anything about him.
Oh, okay. So we'll find out.
I mean, the shocking to me was Charlie Rose and Garrison Keillor. I mean, then it turns out, because you don't know these people. You know them by their persona from television, you know?
That's not shocking. They seem like schmucks to me. And now what's shocking would be somebody like Larry King, but somebody like Weinstein's not shocking because...
No, Harvey Weinstein always struck me as a creep. He just seems creepy.
Yeah, well,
he's full of his power, you know. He's drunk.
Well, he's
power.
Ugly, man. And most ugly people are not ugly.
Well,
people.
I just looked at, they put a list, 33 powerful men, and I looked at them and to one, they're all pretty brutal. You know, there's a couple of guys from the Republic. It's a newspaper, I guess.
Uh-huh.
They look like someone's idea of a mad scientist in a sci-fi film. Really, big-looking guys. And I'm like, okay, I could see that guy being, you know, that's not surprising. And really, on the list, there really wasn't anybody that shocked me.
What about C.K. Lewis?
Louis C.K.? I mean, going by his weird.
You
said you said it backwards. C.K. Lewis, like C.S. Lewis, wrote Alice in Wonderland.
Who the heck is that?
Louis C.K.
Yeah,
it's disappointing, but
it's a writer.
Again, like, you know, kind of just another person, and he apologized, so now you know he did it, unlike our president, who apologizes and then retracts his apology and says,
geez,
maybe it's fake.
First of all, you want to, this is bad. When you know a comic like me, who's only been in it 3 years, very short time, had heard about him, and I'm way down low on the totem pole, that's a shame. I had heard about him, but
yeah.
They wouldn't say his name outright, but I knew who they were talking about, and then so it didn't. And there's some people, I have a psychic reading, so I can just read people, and it's not fair. I kind of cheat, because, like, I can see things in people, and I can't just walk up to you and be like, yeah, I knew your ass was a pervert. I saw what you did.
Yeah.
I can't do that. It would be creepy on my part, right? So, but I do have a theory. All these men coming out, being put out there, are all ugly-ass men. Bill Cosby.
Who
would sleep with him? Who? I would not find that man attractive. Now this is Denzel Washington. Now we got a deal. Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'd like for one of them to, like, walk up and pinch my butt. You know what I'm saying?
Did you see Denzel's new film where he's rocking the fro in the 70s?
Yes.
I look good. He never disappoints. He's such a great actor.
He really is a great, great actor. Really great.
I would be devastated, like, if somebody... If there was a bad story about him or Tom Hanks,
because they both have
nothing but, and then Keanu Reeves, the same thing. All you hear is secrets leak out about how good they are, because you don't really hear stories like that. That's not what the newspapers want to focus on.
I've heard a couple of stories, not stories about being
not stories of being perverted, but I've heard a couple of other stories, like, you know, former addict, stuff like that. But nothing, nothing, you know, like abusing a girl or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Cheating on the wife, but nothing else major. I don't know how true.
Addicts abuse themselves primarily. That's part of it.
Well, hey, it's Hollywood. See, guys, it's a different perspective for you guys, because I've heard guys who were abused, you know, even by women bosses, and say, yeah, they touched their butt or something, but they're not going to go up and say, my boss touched my butt. It's like everyone.
You don't hear guys complaining about stuff like that because
no,
we're wired differently.
They should, but they should. But because then it would
yeah.
be more commonplace for us to believe that, oh, this also happens to you guys too. Like, so we know it, but we don't
yeah.
ever see it or hear it. No one says that. No one walks up and says, you know, for 5 years, I had to go get my boss coffee, and she would, you know, rub against me when I walked by. No one's telling those stories, you know. So, unfortunately,
I've never had a that kind of job. You
know, so. No, but you know, I guess it's like the equivalent of like, you know, like me, for instance. I'm over 50. I'm not dating right now. So like, you know, if a hot guy rubs up against me, I might say, "What are you doing? Let's go on a date." You know, I don't know. I might.
Yeah, I know. It's like, how is this changing? How is this going to change?
Yeah,
I mean.
Mom,
if you take the workplace out of it and
yeah.
make it just person to person, you think it's going to change a relationship?
Yeah.
Or at least the beginning of a relationship?
I think.
Is it going to feel awkward? Like, I mean, you're holding hands is fine, but when you start touching each other a little more, is it going to be in the back of your mind, like, all this stuff? Or do you think it's not going to matter?
Mm.
I don't drink, so you don't. I can take that excuse. Like a lot of times, when I stop drinking, I remember thinking, "Where
yeah.
goes that old excuse?"
Yeah, no, that's yeah, that's good that you don't drink. Miracle.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm saying dating wise, do you think it's going to hamper things? Do you think it's not going to matter? How do you feel like if you went out with a guy that you just met?
Uh-huh.
Do you think you're going to feel differently if? He starts touching you, or you know.
Yeah, I don't like somebody touching me when I first meet them. I'm very funny
yeah,
up. If I give you a hug, that means I feel comfortable with you. You know, as a person,
that's good because you hug me. I hug you back.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Martha. Thank you, Martha.
For hugging.
Yeah, no. Some, you know, like you guys, my comic friends. You know, I feel comfortable enough to hug. But there's a couple
yeah.
of. I feel like an electrical shock, like, don't come near me, you know? I know it's some weird thing, but that's just me. I don't know.
Yeah.
So have you heard the latest, also on the affirmative action, Harvard might be sued. Some people are suing for discrimination, some white people and some Asians.
Really?
Yep, for affirmative action. They said they couldn't get in
so,
to be discriminated against. I was like, wait a minute. There's only like 3 black people at Harvard. What are you being discriminated against?
Oh, I didn't hear about that one.
Yeah, today. I just saw it on the news about 5 minutes ago.
Oh, but
yeah, it's crazy.
It seems
how do you,
people are
first
so
of all, affirmative action.
Nowadays, you know. I guess it's a good time to be a lawyer.
Yeah, it's just.
Plenty of business.
Correct me if I'm wrong. People call in. If you're listening, call in and let us know. But if they made affirmative action because of Jim Crow laws and slavery, they had to come
yeah.
up with something in order for black people, African Americans, Native Americans, whatever you want to call them, to be able to enter into certain institutions. That's why they made it, okay? They still kept them in place because there's still people right now, Donald Trump, who don't feel like they want to advance African Americans for any reason, even if they have a degree, don't have a degree, it doesn't matter. They don't want to put them in their college clubhouses and all that stuff. So this still is in effect. So they have to put it in effect because if they don't, you really will be back to the Jim Crow era. So now how
yeah.
are you going to come back and say, well, I'm Asian. First of all, here's my thing on that. You got reparations. We didn't even get that. Okay, so let's call affirmative action at least that, a little piece of it, if you want to call that.
Yeah, the beginning.
And then as far as being white, I think that you can get yourself into pretty much anything you want to if you're clever enough. Not saying all, but you probably could more likely than if I could. I'm just saying. It's not a fact, and I think
I'm pride myself on saying I don't really care what someone's walls are. I usually go in there thinking I'm going to break them down or at least not let them stop me. You know what I'm saying?
And in a sense, letting that go on is the right thing to do because, in a sense, like you said, it's a very small part of reparations.
Yeah.
People want to have excuses for what they can't get, and that's why they're doing that, you know?
Yes.
I had a friend that applied to be a fireman, and he was upset because they ended up hiring a Hispanic woman.
Oh, really? That's a miracle. Why do you?
They're covering, you know, they're getting a woman first, which they had, I don't think they had any women in the fire department.
No.
So is that a firewoman, I suppose? Not a fireman? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they didn't have enough or, you know, for Hispanic people to represent in a largely Hispanic community. I don't have a problem with it, you know? I really don't.
Here's the thing. I think that whoever's qualified should get it. And I think that the only time that, you know, if they have absolutely, I mean, you can't tell me that you have, 500 people on your police force and that not one qualified that was African-American. That's when it's like, we got problems here. So that's the only reason why I agree that they should still have affirmative action, because if you don't have it, man, people will.
And also, that's the liaison to the community. And if you have a bunch of only white cops running around in a predominantly black neighborhood,
yes, which you always
it sends a bad signal. And it, you know, I mean, granted, there are some amazing cops cross the barrier anyway, just because of their heart. You know, I saw a story of a cop that saw a woman that was walking 2 hours to work every day. He took his own money and went to a dealership, and the guy gave him a break, and they bought her a car for $4,000. Not a great car because he's not making a lot of money.
They got her
a car. She was crying. She was so happy, you know.
And it
was a great story, but you didn't hear it, you know. You had to dig really deep.
A lot of stories you don't hear because, you know, there's just a lot of crap going on with false news, blah, blah, blah. But we know there's good cops out there, and I know there's good cops out there. And the one that's bad is probably one out of, like, you know, out of 100. You know, it's not every.
I've had
bad incidents twice with cops, so you would think I would be opposite. But I know there are some good people. I have a great neighbor that's an awesome cop, and I was so happy he's on NYPD. My sister's father was a cop, NYPD. So, you know, I have a half affection for most of them. I just worry about some of the ones who do police in the inner city area, and they're coming from, like, Long Island. You know what I'm saying? And they're going into the inner city, and they ain't never been around black people in their lives. That bothers me. That's very worrisome because, you know, you'd be thinking, like, they're kind of looking at me like I'm an animal instead of, like, a human. So that's my problem.
It's a horrible way to feel, I think.
Yeah, but enough about them. What did you think about – did you hear about the Grammy Awards that – Jay-Z was up for an award, and Kendrick Lamar and somebody else African American. So people were saying, why are all the black people up for awards? And and someone said, duh, because of the talent. They were talented.
No, I was just fascinated that he was talking about cheating on his wife. I mean, she's pretty much many people's ultimate fantasy woman, and he cheated on her. Talking about it.
I know. Dude, how are you going to cheat
on that? That was shocking. I mean,
her album was about him cheating, Lemonade.
Yeah, and he was talking about listening to it. Like, he goes, well, the best place to be in a hurricane is in the center of the hurricane. So he's listening to her music about how she felt, and she's listening to his about this, you know, his feelings. I thought that was an interesting awkward way to communicate, and they both get Grammys out of their pain. So,
yeah,
everybody should be so lucky, you know.
Yeah, I think it's clever. I mean, you know.
I mean, there's always art and angst, and you know, and sure enough. Yeah. But I don't know. It's just funny that not funny, but it's kind of sad that somebody that's the ultimate, she still gets cheated on.
I know. Yeah. Well, that's the thing about it is that. You know, if your guy is a cheater, and he's just that's just what he does. it doesn't matter how beautiful you are. He's never, yeah, ever faithful, ever, ever. You could wear, you know, La Perla, high heels, shoes, lace, thongs, whatever, and it will not matter in the end, because that's what his nature is. And so I learned early on, when I pick a guy that I like, I usually don't pick guys that like strippers, guys that like that frequent clubs, you know, those clubs, because that means they have a high appetite already. And so I don't want to be in competition with anybody. So I'm gonna already be in a competition. Why am I gonna go with somebody who loves the internet more than physical somebody really there? That doesn't make sense to me. So it's okay.
That's another thing I was considering with this whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to look at it psychologically,
mm-hmm,
and the way the popularity of porn, as far as like it's migrating into people's minds, and like it's so accessible now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if, you know, in a way that has something to do with it, because it's like it's sexualized men way more than they were before.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, it's almost like they start thinking that that's their reality.
Yep.
You know, because and now it's like they're acting like they're in a porn video, and they're just like, oh, this is what a guy in a porn does. You know, like they drop their pants and they expect it the woman to look at it like it's the winning lottery ticket. Not realizing those are actors and actresses, you know.
Like Willy Wonka.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, look, it has a golden light on it. Now, you're a creepy old guy that I work for, actually. It's not as exciting as you would hope, you know. I thought about that, too, what that could contribute. I think a lot of it, you know, is...
Well, also, you got... What about Japan? They got that doll. Remember I told you Jenny is $30,000 and you could pay $10,000?
Oh, the love dolls, yeah. They just wrote about that again in Wired. They're thinking by 2020 that'll be a regular thing, you know.
That's horrible. I Googled it. Well, actually, I take it back. It's actually kind of good. Like, cause if you're a serial killer, I'd be like, instead of being like, I'm going to find some size 10, it's like you could just buy a Jenny doll and be like, I want a size 10, red hair.
Jenny. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It'd be like, Jenny, yeah. So now you will do less killing because you got your Jenny doll.
Well, you hope so, you know.
We hope that'll help serial killers.
Get one guy. But I don't know if serial killers have that kind of coin. Maybe it'll be discount Jenny's.
I think it'll be perfect. Yeah. They can keep their butts in their house and never come out.
There was a documentary on a guy at Lars. They made a movie, Lars and the Real Girl, but there was also behind the scenes a real story of a guy. And it was kind of sad because he was lonely and he had gotten fixated on this doll. But like you said, he took him off the streets. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of be weird if you saw somebody. There's a guy that lives near me that has a mannequin looking out his window. And I always wondered if that's his Friday night date or he's just doing it to be funny.
That's so funny.
No, and he actually, you know what he does? He has bees, and he makes harvest honey. Mm-hmm. And I was actually at a house doing some remodeling, and they had honey. And the guy says, oh, look, this is from near your house. And it's from his house. And I said, oh, that's the guy with the mannequin. And they looked at me like, what? And he's right around the corner. It's weird. In the summer, when you go by the house, all the bees are out, you know, outside those boxes.
Oh my
but
God.
They stay, you know, you're not messing with the hives. They don't mess with you.
That's right. I won't mess with you.
And there's a mannequin looking out the window, so you kind of hustle along.
That's,
you know,
creepy. It might be like a Handmaid's Tale or something crazy. I don't know. That's really
I've heard
creepy.
Stories of people putting mannequins so they can drive in that special lane, you know, the commuter lane. Have two
what people. Lane would that be?
You put a mannequin in your seat and you buzz along. This guy has it sticking out the window. It's topless too, so she's a sexy mannequin. And she's got like she's kind of waving, you know.
Yes, okay, I got it. Well, listen, Murph, guess what? Our half an hour is already up. Can you believe it?
Time flies when it's Tanya Cooper.
We have so many questions to ask, so we can take you Saturday at Otto's Shrunken Head. On 14th Street.
Otto's Shrunken Head, 6 o'clock. Marissa's fifth. Host is Tommy Carolyn. You know Tommy.
Yeah, I love Tommy.
We go to Molly Spillane. He's going to be hosting and got a bunch of good comments. If you go on Facebook, Merriment and Mortification, you can see the lineup and get any. If you forget where the place is, you can look it up. Come on down, have a drink with an umbrella, and hang out and have some laughs and get your Saturday started right.
Will Marissa be there?
Oh, yes, she will be. She'll be performing and keeping it all together. And who else is going to be there? Rodney, Rodney Daniels, her podcast partner.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love Rodney.
And I really didn't recognize anybody else. What's great for me, too, is I get to meet a lot of new comics every time I go. Gregory Hall's going to be there. A lot of good comics. It's going to be a good time. You're crazy if you don't go. You'll be crazy.
Yeah, I hope you have fun. I'll be packing gift boxes for Aged Out Foster Youth for Foster Kids Unite Saturday.
Oh, you're such a good person.
Oh,
I gotta step up my good person game.
That's my Quaker side.
Well, have a great time. Thanks for calling. Appreciate the effort.
Yeah, we thank you so much for being our guest. And we'll talk to you
welcome.
Again. Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot. Have a great evening.
All right, thank you. That was comic mate James Murphy, and you've been listening to On the Town. I'm your host, Tanya, and we will check you out next week. Until then, hey, have a great night.